Welcome to the seventh and final module of the Microsoft Partner Practice Enablement Bootcamp Training. My name is Rick Rainey, and I am a Microsoft Azure trainer and consultant for Opsgility, a training company focused on the Microsoft Azure platform. It is my pleasure to be your instructor for this module. You can contact me on Twitter at RickRaineyTX or through our website at Opsgility.com. The topic for this module is Managing and Monitoring Virtual Machines. For the agenda, I'm going to start by discussing the monitoring and alerting capabilities from the Microsoft Azure Management Portal, and then discuss how you can use your existing on-premises monitoring investments with your workloads that you've moved to Microsoft Azure. While we're talking about monitoring, I'm going to introduce you to a nifty little tool that you can use to also monitor the Microsoft Azure platform. Next, we'll take a look at some techniques you can use to manage virtual machines hosted in Microsoft Azure. And then finally, we'll look at using the Microsoft Azure PowerShell commandlets for management and automation capabilities. So let's get started with monitoring virtual machines in Microsoft Azure. In the Azure Management Portal, there's basically two types of monitoring metrics that you can use to monitor your virtual machine. The first is web endpoint monitoring, or outside in. And it's called outside in because you're monitoring from an external location the virtual machine using its public endpoints, so port 80, for example. The other option is performance counters, and these are your standard CPU utilization, disk I/O, network I/O, and etc. Using these monitoring metrics, you can then specify alerts based on a condition and a threshold that you control. And if and when that alert condition is met, Microsoft Azure can automatically send an email to the administrators of the subscription or to a specific email address. In the Azure Management Portal, if you go to the Monitor tab for a particular virtual machine, then you can see the various performance counters that are currently being measured. And you can enable these counters using the little check marks next to the individual metrics. So if you want to enable or disable a particular counter, it will reflect that in the graph above. And of course, you can also add and remove metrics. So you have a lot of monitoring capabilities easily accessible just using the Azure Management Portal. And you can even select the metrics for monitoring that are most applicable to your workload and then trigger alerts based on those monitoring metrics. So you also get a lot of flexibility as well. To define an alert based on a metric, simply click on the metric of interest and then click on the alerts at the bottom of the screen. And the first part to configuring the alert is to just simply give it a name and a description. You'll notice that the service type and the service name are filled in for you. The next step is to define the condition for the alert notifications. So for example, you can specify that your condition be greater than or less than a certain value. On the slide here is an alert being configured for CPU percentage. So you can see here that we're defining an alert that will be triggered if the CPU is greater than 70%. And in the alert evaluation window, you can see that we're setting this to the average over the last 5 minutes. So this means that this condition of exceeding 70% CPU has to be sustained for a period of 5 minutes in order for this alert to be triggered. And then finally, in the actions section is where you indicate whether or not you want to have an email sent to the service administrators and co-administrators on the Azure subscription or to a specified email address. This is an example of the rules alert that you would receive when an alert is actually triggered. The outside-in monitoring that I mentioned earlier is a service that can query public HTTP or HTTPS endpoints from up to 3 different global locations. The way this works is the monitoring service will essentially get the URL address that you've put into your endpoints configuration. So here you can see that there's one endpoint at autoscaleservice1.cloudapp.net. And so the monitoring service will perform an HTTP GET on that address from the locations that are selected in the locations drop-down box. if the monitoring service gets a response of HTTP 400 or higher, then the endpoint is considered down and an alert will show up in the portal for the time that that endpoint was down. It will also raise an alert if the response took longer than 30 seconds. So perhaps, you know, it received an HTTP 200 back, but it took longer than 30 seconds. It would consider that to be an unhealthy endpoint as well and raise an alert in the portal. You'll notice these alerts in the dashboard page for the virtual machine. So if you go there, you'll see any alerts that may have occurred. Now, if you move to the management section of the Azure Management Portal, then you can see all the alerts for virtual machines in your Azure subscription. You'll notice up here that there's a service type virtual machine. You can set that to other service types, and then it'll show all the alerts occurring for virtual machines in your subscription. The auto-scale feature in Microsoft Azure Platform is a fantastic feature that really captures the notion of elasticity in cloud computing. By using auto-scale, you're able to scale instances of your virtual machines up and down in your cloud service based on various metrics. The way auto-scale works is basically you create a maximum number of virtual machine instances that you want to be able to automatically scale your cloud service to. These virtual machine instances need to be identical, including the virtual machine size. And of course, if you're going to be creating several virtual machines, then you probably want to use a script to automate that process. And then finally, the virtual machines need to be deployed into the same availability set. Once you've done that, you can enable autoscale based on either a CPU utilization metric, or you could base it on queue depth from your Azure storage queues. Auto-scaling based on CPU is pretty straightforward. It's triggered based on the CPU threshold that you specify across the cloud service. So if it's above the threshold for a specified period of time, then Azure will add more running instances to your cloud service. If it falls below the range for a specified amount of time, then Azure can remove the running instances. In other words, shut those instances down in your cloud service. Auto-scaling based on queue depth is similar. The difference is in the number of messages that are in the queue is what is being measured. So if your application is processing messages from an Azure storage queue and there are more messages than what you have indicated in your threshold, then Azure will automatically scale instances up in your cloud service for you. Auto-scale also offers you the flexibility to have different auto-scale configurations based on one or more schedules for more detailed control over your scaling needs. If you want your auto-scale configuration to be the same regardless of the time of day or the day of the week, then you'll pretty much just leave your scheduling setting alone, just specify no scheduled time. However, if your workload varies based on a schedule, then it would be better for you to define auto-scale configurations based on the time of day or the day of the week. And finally, with auto-scale, you also have the option of configuring auto-scale rules for specific dates. So for example, maybe it's the Christmas sale on Black Friday. This is a slide indicating an example of what auto-scale configuration might look like for the CPU metric for perhaps weekday configurations. Select the desired schedule, in this case weekday. Next, you would specify what your instance range should be, the minimum and maximum. And just a reminder that for virtual machines, these instances need to be pre-created and available in your availability set. Next is you would specify your target CPU range. And this is simply the optimal CPU range that you would like for your workload. If the average utilization across the cloud service is below the low end of that range, then Azure will lower the number of instances all the way down to the minimum number that you specify. If the utilization is above the range, Azure will increase the number of instances until the average utilization across the service is back within the desired range, or until the maximum number of instances are added. You can also indicate how many instances you want to scale up or down at a time. You can also specify what the delay should be between actions. So for example, if you add instances to the cloud service, you can tell Azure not to add additional instances for a period of 20 minutes. All right, so let's take a look at monitoring virtual machines using the Azure Management Portal. In this lab, we're going to see how to configure a set of servers for endpoint and performance counter monitoring. Next, we're going to configure alerts, and then we're going to see how you can create a custom image to make it simpler for creating identical virtual machine instances in the cloud service. After the image is created, we're going to configure autoscale to scale the cloud service instances up and down based on a CPU metric. Now, this lab assumes that we've already created a cloud service with two virtual machine instances in it, and that's what I'm showing here on my screen right now. It's the Monitor VM service. And if I drill into that and look at the instances, you'll see I have two virtual machines running, a Monitor VM1 and Monitor VM2. So the first part of this lab is to simply sign into each virtual machine and copy over a sample application that we're going to use to spike the CPU on each of the virtual machine instances. So I'm going to start with virtual machine 1 and we'll connect to that. Okay, and what we're going to do is copy this sample application to the inetpub.ww.root folder. So that will be right here. Okay, so now that's done on my VM1 instance, so now I'm going to repeat this process on VM2. Okay, so now that that's done, we just need to validate that the application is working on both virtual machines. And what we're looking for is the name of the machine to change. So as I refresh this, I may have to do this a few times. And then we have Monitor VM1. So the application is installed and working on both virtual machines, so we can now continue on to the next exercise in the lab. Okay, so in this next step, we're going to configure the endpoint monitoring. So I'm going to go to Monitor VM1, and then we'll just go to the dashboard. And in the dashboard, I'm going to click on the Configure Web Endpoint Monitoring. And down here in the monitoring section, I'm going to give this monitoring a name. I'm just going to call it HTTP. And it's already picked up the DNS name for my cloud service that the virtual machines are running in. And next is just to pick some locations. You can pick up to 3. I'm just going to go ahead and pick, since I'm running in the East Coast, I'll pick Chicago, California, and let's do Texas. And then save these changes. Okay, so now that we have endpoint monitoring set up, we can now move on to the next exercise, which is to configure the metrics and alerts using these endpoints. So to do that, we'll go to the monitor page for Monitor VM1. Then I'm going to click on the Add Metrics link at the bottom of the screen. And then on that window is an endpoints tab that we can go to, and here we'll see the endpoints that were added when we configured the endpoint monitoring in the previous exercise. As you can see, I've already got the response time metrics selected, but I'm going to go ahead and select the uptime metrics as well. So now I'm going to add a rule based on the CPU percentage for this machine. So I'm going to highlight the CPU percentage metric, click on the add rule button at the bottom of the screen. You'll notice the service type is grayed out as well as the service name. It's already picked that up for me. And for the condition, we want the condition to be greater than 80%. In other words, we want the CPU to exceed 80% for an average of the last 5 minutes. And the action that I want it to take is to email the service administrator or co-administrators on the Azure subscription. So I'll go ahead and add that rule. And now I'm basically just going to repeat that process, but I'm going to do it for one of the endpoint monitoring metrics that were added from the previous task. So let's choose, for example, the uptime metric for Chicago. And I'll click on the add rule here. And I'm going to call this the uptime alert. And for this rule, our threshold value, we're going to target 95%. And our condition, rather than greater than, we're going to be less than. So less than 95% of the uptime metric for the last 15 minutes. And when that occurs, we want to send an email, again, to the service administrator on the Azure subscription. Okay, so now we've configured the metrics and the alerts. So we'll move on to the next task. In this next exercise, we're going to create an image that we can later use for auto-scaling, and we're going to base that image off of the image that's running as Monitor VM2 in my case. So I'm going to go back to the console for Monitor VM2. Okay, so what we're going to do now is run the sys preparation tool, and we want to generalize this image, and we want to shut down the image once it's done. Okay, so now we can see that Monitor VM2 is stopped. The sys prep generalization is complete, and we're now going to move on to the next exercise, which is to capture an image of that virtual machine. So to do that, I'm going to click on Monitor VM2. And then drill into this, and here I'm going to click the capture button down at the bottom of the screen. And this is important. We need to indicate that we've run sysprep on the virtual machine. Okay, so we can see now that the image has been registered with my Azure subscription. And one thing you might have noticed if you were paying close attention is my number of virtual machines changed. It went from 7 to 6. And in fact, it's because that Monitor VM2 instance is now gone. So if I go back to instances, you'll notice that in my cloud service for the monitoring VM service, there's no longer two virtual machines. There's just the one, Monitor VM1. And this is just a result of going through the sysprep and capture image process that I just showed. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go back and recreate Monitor VM2 from the image that we just captured. I want to make sure that I use the same cloud service that I was using before, and I also want to make sure I put it in the same availability set. And so now I'm going to repeat the process and create a third virtual machine in my cloud service. So again, going into the gallery, click on My Images, select the image. This will be Monitor VM3. I'm going to use the same cloud service and the same availability set. Okay, so Monitor VM2 is up and running, so I can start with the last part of this task, which is to add the load balanced endpoint to each of these virtual machines. So I'll start with Monitor VM2. And I'm going to add an existing load balance set, which is already there, called LBHTTP. I'm going to give this a name, HTTP. All right, so we have the load balanced endpoint added on virtual machine 2. So I'm going to do the same thing for virtual machine 3. Okay, so now we have the load balanced endpoint on all three virtual machines. So now we can, now that this is all complete, we can move on to the next task, which is to configure the autoscale properties for this cloud service. So I'm going to go to the dashboard for the cloud service and click on the configure autoscale link. And we want to scale this cloud service using the CPU metric. And we're going to specify our available range of instances being between 1 and 3. The target CPU range, we'll leave that at 60 to 80%. And we want to scale up by 2 instances at a time. And let's set the wait time to 5 minutes. And we'll also set the scale down wait time to 5 minutes as well. And we're going to go ahead and stop Monitor VM2 and Monitor VM3. And also shut down Monitor VM3. All right, so in our Monitor VM service, I have the one virtual machine that's running. The other two are stopped. And we're going to depend on autoscale to now scale these instances up and down as needed. And so that takes us to the last part of this lab, which is to simulate the CPU activity or spike the CPU. And since we just have Monitor VM1 running, that's going to be the server that serves up the application. So if we browse to the application, I'll just go ahead and hit refresh. You'll notice that Monitor VM1 is currently the only one available, so it's what's serving up the request. So I'm going to spike the CPU at 95% for 60 minutes. All right, so I've stepped away actually for a couple hours. So what you're looking at now is the effect of my CPU across my cloud service spiking and then being lowered as a result of other instances being instantiated in the cloud service to meet that load. So one way I can show that, we can go back and look at the logs and see where the autoscale rules kicked in. So to do that, it's just a matter of going back to the navigation bar over here. I'm going to go to Management Services and look at Operation Logs. And I'm going to filter this for just autoscale type of events. And so just to summarize real quickly, what we saw was when I configured the autoscale settings, that's what this put autoscale setting event was. So if I look at the details of that, basically this was just defining the autoscale rule. And again, that just relates back to what we actually did in the portal. What's interesting though is the next log. So you'll notice at 6:06 p.m. an autoscale action actually occurred. So if I go look at the details of that, you'll notice down at the bottom that my instance count went from 1 to 3. And that was, if you just to recall, my CPU was running at about 87%. So I was above my 80% threshold. And my rule said that once I exceeded that for a period of 5 minutes or more, to go ahead and increase the instance count by 2. So that's how we went from 1 to 3. And about 20 minutes later, another autoscale action occurred. And if we look at the details of that, you'll notice that the old instance count went from 3 to a new instance count of 2. So recall again that the rule said once we fell below 60% and sustained that value for a window of at least 5 minutes to start scaling down one instance at a time. So that's how we went from 3 to 2. And then you see one more autoscale action again about 20 minutes later. If we look at the details of that, you'll notice that we went from 2 instances to 1 instance. So that's how you configure autoscale, and that is how you can observe the autoscale logs for your cloud service. So while we're talking about monitoring virtual machines, I felt like it'd be appropriate to talk about monitoring the Azure platform. One of the things that I particularly like is how Microsoft is so transparent about the status of Azure services, and they make available an Azure service dashboard that you can reach from your browser. Just simply go to the URL on the screen that you see here, and you can see the current status of all the Azure services in the platform, even by region. And you can configure the dashboard to refresh on various intervals, like 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 30 minutes, whichever you prefer. And if you prefer to have a reader, just subscribe to the feed. They publish these service status updates as an RSS feed. And then finally, on the screen here, you'll notice there is a tab where you can drill into the history and actually see the history. So for example, if you experienced problems in one of your applications, one thing you might do is go back to the history and see if that problem was a result of a service outage that your application had a dependency on. This is just a snapshot of the Azure service dashboard. It's not complete. It's just showing the first few rows at the very top, but this is the kind of data that you'd be able to see in the Azure service dashboard. All right, so let's move on to managing virtual machines. So let's get started with application deployment and just talk about, you know, what is the best way to get applications into a virtual machine? And the answer is, really, it depends on the application. So the first option is really simple, and it's the one we've been using quite a bit, and that is, if the application exists in the Microsoft Azure Image Gallery, then it's easy to just create a virtual machine based on that image and to get things started. If it is not available as a gallery image, then you still have some options. For example, you could manually deploy the application onto the new virtual machine. And this basically means starting up the virtual machine, connecting to it, and then installing the software just like you would any other environment. This works well if the installation happens infrequently and is relatively simple to do. However, if the application is more complex and you know that you may be deploying a virtual machine for this workload frequently, then creating a custom virtual machine image using SysPrep in the Azure Capture feature may be the right choice for you. And as we saw in the last demo, this is a relatively simple way to speed up the deployment of applications. Now, if you have an existing application that's running in a virtualized environment that you would like to move to the cloud, then the Azure PowerShell commandlets support the ability to upload and register VHDs as either operating system disk, data disk, or images, depending on what you upload. After it has been registered, you can create a virtual machine from the image if it has a supported operating system on it. Or if the application just has application binaries on it, you can attach it as a data disk. And finally, if the application that you're deploying needs configuration after the initial installation, then remote PowerShell can be used to script the deployment on the virtual machine. If you watched the previous session on SQL Server and SharePoint, then you already saw examples of this technique. Now, you also have options when it comes to administering the virtual machines that you create in Microsoft Azure. For example, you can connect to your virtual machines over the public internet, which is really simple, but without some additional steps, your virtual machines are open to the public. So anyone with a port scanner and a client could attempt to attack your virtual machine. Configuring an access control list on the remote management endpoints is, however, a good method to secure endpoints from unwarranted access. Using some of the virtual networking features such as site-to-site or point-to-site, you can remove all the public endpoints from your Azure virtual machines and only connect using the internal IP address. This is a very secure method because only a user from your network would be able to connect to the virtual machine in Azure. And then finally, for Windows-based machines, Azure virtual machines have remote PowerShell endpoints enabled by default, as well as the remote desktop endpoints. For the Linux-based virtual machines, SSH is enabled, and you have the option to authenticate either through a password or SSH key. And it's not just the operating system that you have to manage. For example, let's pick an application that can be remotely managed and discuss a few scenarios on how to secure it. So for example, let's start with SQL Server. It is possible to connect and manage SQL Server remotely on a virtual machine without opening the virtual machine up in Remote Desktop. First thing you need to do is just simply create a new TCP endpoint that forwards a public port to the SQL virtual machine on port 1433. Then open up the Windows firewall on the SQL virtual machine to allow that traffic in. You'll want to enable mixed authentication and create an account to access the SQL Server remotely. And then you can connect to the SQL Server virtual machine using SQL Server Management Studio. Just ensure that you specify the public port if you didn't specify the public port as 1433. And of course, this should be secured with an access control list. And again, a more secure approach to this would be to only manage this virtual machine through the internal IP address by enabling either the site-to-site or point-to-site, or even ExpressRoute for that matter. The virtual machine will be on the same network and as secure as the network you are connecting from. So let's talk a minute about deleting and creating virtual machines and disk. First of all, when cleaning up resources, it's important to understand what options are available to you for resource cleanup. When you delete a single virtual machine, the portal gives you the option of retaining the disk. And this allows you to come back and create a virtual machine and then reattach the disk if needed. Just a quick tip here, if you need to move an existing virtual machine to an existing virtual network, this is one way that you can do that. You also have the option of deleting all of the virtual machines and all of the disks in just one click. It is a good idea to only deploy data that is written to on data disk. The cache on the OS disk by default is set to read-write, and unless you're just absolutely positive that the application that you're going to deploy is writing to the disk always using the write-through flag, then it's typically not going to be safe to store that data on the OS disk. Also, remember that the D drive is only a temporary disk. Anything that you put on this disk could be deleted in the event of a health check, or if you move to a virtual network, or resize the disk. Pretty much anything that gives the Azure Fabric Controller the opportunity to move your virtual machine will result in data on drive D being lost. Also, remember to plan for capacity when deploying virtual machines. Your storage account, which is where the underlying disk for your virtual machines are stored, has a scalability target of 20,000 IOPS, and a virtual machine disk has a scalability target of 500 IOPS. So be sure to do the math based on the predicted utilization and plan for capacity. So just to recap, the default settings for Microsoft Azure Disk are as follows. The OS disk does have read-write caching enabled and can be switched to read-only using the set Azure OS disk PowerShell commandlet. This does require a restart. And data disks have no caching enabled but can be switched to read-write and read-only using the set Azure data disk PowerShell commandlet or using the portal. Another good management tip is that whenever latency is an issue for your application, try to have your workloads connected in a way where they're on the same virtual network. Now, this is not going to always be possible, but in the scenarios where it is, avoiding the extra hops of going through the load balancer will help to decrease that latency. Another best practice is to take advantage and reuse any existing management capability investments that you've made for your on-premises environment. System Center is a great example of a management suite that, when paired with virtual networking features like site-to-site, allows you to manage and monitor virtual machines in the cloud in the same way that you can your own on-premises environment. So let's take a look now at managing virtual machines using PowerShell. The architecture for the Microsoft Azure Automation starts with the Azure Fabric Controller. The Fabric Controller is responsible for finding the resources and then provisioning virtual machines or virtual networks and pretty much any of the other backend services in Azure. The Service Management API is the API that clients such as PowerShell or the Cross-Platform Command Line Tools or CLI in other applications that might be developed by third parties, or even, for example, the Microsoft Azure Management Portal to perform automation. Using the Azure PowerShell commandlets, you can pretty much script just about any task. Let's just talk about some of the common ones. For example, advanced provisioning of virtual machines. So using PowerShell, it's possible to provision a virtual machine with all the configurations specified in one step. So you can specify data disk, endpoints, including configuring the load balancer, access control list, everything that you can think of in one API call. You can have a Windows-based virtual machine automatically join a domain at boot. And you can also tell PowerShell to execute a script once the virtual machine is up and running for automated deployments, or as something as simple as just formatting all the data disk on the initial boot. Uploading and downloading a virtual hard disk is another common task. The Azure PowerShell commandlets support an optimized upload and download of VHDs to and from Microsoft Azure. And what this means is they can take a VHD and only upload the bytes that have been written on the disk. So for example, if you had a 15 gigabyte disk and only 10 gigabytes are used, then the remaining 5 gigabytes of empty space would not be transferred. These commandlets can also convert dynamic VHDs to fixed VHDs automatically during upload. Unfortunately, this does not work going the other way. Any VHD that you download will be a fixed disk. Copying disk is another common task. The Azure PowerShell commandlets have the ability to copy VHDs between storage accounts, whether they are across subscriptions or even across regions. And with storage cleanup, you can easily write a query to find and remove all unattached disks for the entire subscription or for a specific cloud service if you wish. Starting and stopping virtual machines is a really important task because you only pay for the compute time of a virtual machine when it is running. So using automation scripts to stop virtual machines for development and test environments, for example, could save you a lot of money. Updating virtual machines, such as opening up or removing endpoints, scripting access control lists, or even adding more storage, everything you can modify on a virtual machine through the portal, you can pretty much script using PowerShell. And then, of course, there is remote PowerShell management. So in addition to using remote PowerShell for post-deployment tasks, many users manage their Microsoft Azure virtual machines headlessly only using PowerShell. In this example, you can see how we're creating a virtual machine using the new Azure VM config commandlet. The new Azure VM config works by creating a virtual machine configuration object. You can then modify the object with other commandlets, as you're going to see in the upcoming demo, to add data disk and endpoints. In this example here, the new Azure VM config commandlet is creating the configuration object with the parameters passed in, such as the virtual machine, the instance size, and the image name. And that object is then passed to the add Azure provisioning config commandlet using the PowerShell pipeline operator. This commandlet modifies the object by specifying the Active Directory domain to use on boot. The virtual machine will attempt to find a domain controller based on the DNS specified in the virtual network. After one is found, it uses the credentials passed in to join the virtual machine to the domain. The set Azure subnet commandlet modifies the virtual machine configuration object to specify which subnet in the virtual network to deploy the virtual machine into. And then finally, from there, the configuration is then passed into the new Azure VM commandlet, which does the work of actually creating the virtual machine using that configuration. In Microsoft Azure, you have the flexibility to upload a disk to the cloud or download it back to your local machine. And these can be bootable OS disks, they can be images, or they could just be data disk. And using the Azure PowerShell commandlets, you can use add Azure VHD to upload a disk and save Azure VHD to download a disk. To drill into this just a little deeper, The add Azure VHD will upload a VHD to the Azure platform in an optimized fashion by only uploading the written bytes of your VHD. And remember, it also supports converting from dynamic to fixed disk during upload. Now, it only supports the VHD format, but it is possible to convert a VHDX or a VMDK file to the VHD file format. As an optional parameter, you can specify the number of uploader threads parameter to increase throughput if you have the additional bandwidth to do so. And so here's a pretty simple example at the bottom of the screen. The source variable just simply points to the local path of a VHD file, and the destination variable is pointing to the target location in your Azure storage account. Downloading a VHD is done in similar fashion, and it includes the same optimizations that we talked about in the previous slide. So only bytes that are written to the VHD are the bytes that are transferred. You can use the number of threads switch to increase throughput. And then, of course, at the bottom is an example just using save Azure VHD. So let's review the steps now to execute a remote PowerShell script. Using remote PowerShell with virtual machines does require a bit of upfront setup. And the reason why is because when a virtual machine is first provisioned, a self-signed certificate is automatically created on your behalf, and it's stored in Microsoft Azure. Now, if you have a valid certificate of your own, this isn't a necessary step, but in order to use the self-signed certificates, you need to download and install the certificate for each virtual machine. After you install the certificate in your local certificate store, you can connect to the virtual machine securely using SSL because your machine can validate the certificate is the same on both ends. There is a sample script that's written and posted on the TechNet Script Center that performs this task for you. The only thing you need to do is include it as part of your script as shown here. After the certificate is installed, there is a helper commandlet that will return back the connection string to create a PowerShell session with. And from there, everything else is plain old PowerShell, and you can create new sessions or execute scripts remotely against your virtual machines. Here is a link to the TechNet Script Center that I mentioned in the previous slide, where you can download the certificate configuration script and other useful scripts. If you click on the Windows Azure link, you'll find all kinds of scripts that are particularly useful in Microsoft Azure. All right, so let's take a look now at a demo where we will use the Azure PowerShell commandlets to create a virtual machine. In this hands-on lab, we're going to be creating a virtual machine using the Azure PowerShell commandlets. So the first task to configuring the Azure PowerShell environment, obviously, is to download the commandlets. So if you open your browser and navigate to azure.com, you'll get to this page. And if you click on the downloads link at the top of the page, just click the install link right here, and that will launch the web platform installer and put the commandlets on your local machine. After you have installed the commandlets, the next thing is to set up your environment in PowerShell. So just simply launch the PowerShell ISE, and in the console window, the blue window down at the bottom of the screen, the first thing I want to do is just import the module, the Azure module. Next, add your Azure account using the Add Azure Account. Just sign in with your credentials that you use to access your Azure subscription. So what this has done is basically pulled in my subscriptions. I actually have multiple subscriptions on my account. You may just have one or just a couple. So the next thing we'll do is actually see what subscriptions are available. So get Azure subscription. And in my case, the subscription I'm going to use for this lab is going to be the second one, the MCT subscription. So I'm going to select that. So the next step is to configure a storage account to use for the selected Azure subscription. And for this lab, I'm going to use the PPE Labs storage account. This next step is really just to verify that the settings are the way we want. And what this does is, again, if you have multiple subscriptions, it shows you what the default or what the current subscription is that you're using for this session. So as you can see at the top, I have a new PowerShell window open, untitled 1.ps1. I'm going to go ahead and just save this as a file that I can then later run again if I want to create a virtual machine using this same script that we're about to write. So just do the save as. Create a virtual machine using the PowerShell commandlets. You need to know a few things. You need to know virtual machine image name. You need to know what region you want to create the virtual machine in. You need credentials to sign into the virtual machine and instance size and things of that nature. So we'll just get started. First one will be a user variable name that we've been using and the password for this user. So now we need a location. And to find out what locations are available for your subscription, you need to run a commandlet. And you can do that using, down here in the console window, we'll just type in get Azure location. And we're just going to select the names for the locations. And so for my subscription, and yours may be different, but this is the locations that are available to me. I've been using East US for most of my stuff, so I'm going to continue doing that. Next, we need a image. So what is the image that we're going to create the virtual machine from? In the Azure PowerShell commandlets, you can run get Azure VM image. Here's all the images that are available. Okay, so here are all the images that have server 2012 R2 in the name. And we'll just go ahead and take the second one, which is the most recent. And we'll put that in the image variable. Now I also need to specify a size for the virtual machine. I'm going to go down to the console window. And I'm going to run get Azure role size. And so these are the names of the sizes that are available. And for this one, I'm just going to go with the small. And finally, as you know from earlier labs and demos, that virtual machines are contained in a cloud service, and that cloud service has to have a unique DNS name associated with that. So we'll specify a variable for the cloud service. Now, again, it needs to be something unique. One way to find out what names are available is to run the test Azure name commandlet. Okay, so I tried PPE Labs VM01 and it returned false, meaning that that name does not exist, so therefore it's currently safe for me to use that in my script. We're going to be creating a base virtual machine configuration, and we're going to be piping the result of various commands into this configuration variable that I'm about to create. So we'll start by using the new Azure VM config commandlet. Now the next thing we want to do is we want to pipe that configuration into another commandlet called add Azure provisioning config. So the way we do that is just take that variable and we use the pipe symbol to pipe that into add Azure provisioning config. Now this next part is optional, but I want to add a couple of data disks to this virtual machine. Pipe this configuration into the add Azure data disk commandlet. Now I'm going to repeat that and add a second data disk. This will be on line one. And then the last part of this configuration is I want to add a public endpoint for port 80 to allow web traffic in and out of the virtual machine. So to do that, just pipe that into the add Azure endpoint commandlet. Okay, so now that we have our configuration complete, The next thing is to take this configuration and pipe it into the new Azure VM commandlet. And this is the commandlet that actually will create the cloud service, as well as the virtual machine in the cloud service. All right, so we've got the script complete, and I'm going to go ahead and save this. And so the next thing is to just simply run this. I'm going to go ahead and give ourselves a little space up here so we can see what's going on. So the output for the script is actually showing up in the console window down below. Okay, so we can see that the command is completed. Operation status is succeeded. So what I'm going to do now is just pull over my Azure portal, and we can see that the cloud service PPE Labs VM01 has been created. It's running. It's got a question mark on it, and that's because it's probably still provisioning the virtual machine. And if we click into that, we can see there is the PPE Labs VM01 virtual machine, and it is still provisioning. And while that's running, we'll go ahead and drill into the PPE Labs VM01, the virtual machine. If I go over to the endpoints, we can see there is our public endpoint web on port 80 for public port and private port, so that took place. And if we look in the dashboard, we can also see that we have our two data disks. So we have our OS disk as well as the two data disks. All right, even though it says provisioning is in progress, I'm going to go ahead and try and connect to this. And so here you can see we're actually signed in to the virtual machine. And so now I can go and configure this virtual machine pretty much however I want. So that concludes this lab of creating a virtual machine using PowerShell. So to wrap things up, in this module, you saw how to enable outside-in monitoring for HTTP endpoints. We looked at how you can enable performance counters such as CPU, disk, and network, and enable alerts that trigger based on those counters. We also learned how to enable the auto-scale capabilities of virtual machines to allow for the elastic scalability that can save time and money when managing your infrastructure. We looked at the Microsoft Azure Service Dashboard as a way for you to monitor the Azure services that your application workloads may have dependencies on. After that, we moved into managing virtual machines, and we discussed some best practices for things like disk configuration and capacity planning. We also looked at remote management techniques, specifically around securing endpoints with access control lists or using a virtual private network with hybrid connectivity for internal only management access. And then finally, we ended the session by going a little bit deeper into Microsoft Azure with PowerShell and using the Azure PowerShell commandlets. We showed how to upload and download VHDs, delete virtual machines and their disk, start and stop virtual machines, and also how to create virtual machines and execute scripts as post-execution for an automated deployment. These are some suggested learning exercises. They include hands-on labs and some videos intended to augment the learning experience for this module. Here are some session resources, again, specific to this module. And here are some Microsoft Azure resources that are not necessarily specific to this module, but just good Azure resources in general. Of course, if you ever have any questions, if you notice down at the bottom, you can always post your questions and get answers using either Stack Overflow or the Microsoft Azure forums. Thank you for watching this presentation.